Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. This week, Russia's Constitutional Court faces perhaps its biggest decision ever, but there's zero suspense, with the court all but certain to approve an amendment enabling President Vladimir Putin to seek re-election in 2024 and again in 2030 if he wants. Meanwhile, Russia is stepping up measures against the coronavirus. Will they work? I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is RFERL senior correspondent Mike Eckel. I should note that Mike is joining us remotely today, and I apologize in advance for any connection problems. Mike, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Happy to be here. You're coming through loud and clear.
All right. Let's turn first to the continuing saga of Putin's constitutional amendments, including the last-minute one that will allow him to potentially remain president until 2036. Legislation on the amendments sailed through both houses of parliament last week, and Putin signed it on Saturday, somewhat unexpectedly, as there had been talk that he would wait until March 18th, which is the day of his reelection in 2018, and also the day in 2014 when the Kremlin claims that Crimea became part of Russia. Of course, most of the world disagrees with this and considers Crimea to remain part of Ukraine. Now, the amendments are supposed to take effect after a nationwide vote that's scheduled for April 22nd. But I just want to go back and discuss the run-up to the Duma second reading vote on March 10th and the last-minute addition of the amendment resetting Putin's term count, which is what will allow him to run again. There's evidence that there may have been some chaos or at least indecision in the Kremlin ahead of time. First, there was a proposal for early Duma elections. But then Valentina Tereshkova came out with the call for letting Putin run again, which is something that he had indicated, at least for a while in the past, that he would not do. But on the other hand, there are also suggestions that Putin may have planned this move, despite those statements, may have planned this move well in advance. He certainly did drop some hints about it in recent weeks when talking about stability and making a few other comments just in the weeks and days ahead of the Duma vote. Mike, it's obviously very hard to know what went on behind the scenes, but what's your feeling? Did Putin know weeks, months, even years ago that he would set himself up to potentially run again? And another question, has he decided to actually do it, or is he just giving himself the option at this point?
So, indeed, there have been these competing schools of thought about what exactly happened in the Kremlin leading up to the announcement by Putin. There's the chaos in the Kremlin thinking, and then there, of course, is this is how it was planned all along. You know, Putin is known for being a tactician. He's also known for improvising things on the fly. People have looked at some of the major military foreign policy actions that Russia has taken in past years.
Absolutely.
To say, well, that they, you know, there's improvisation going on here. Syria is the best example of that. Not that there was any sort of great overarching grand strategic theory behind it, but it was kind of, all right, let's do this and see how it works, and then let's go forward and see how that works.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I tend to subscribe to that theory that there is a whole lot of improvisation going on. And it, as you pointed out, there's been lots of hints dropped over the past, not just weeks, but months, that, you know, that there were constitutional changes, substantive constitutional changes under discussion at the highest levels of the Kremlin and the Russia's political elite. And last year, over a period of, I think, 4 or 5 months, we had the chairman of the Constitutional Court floating the idea of changing the Constitution. We had one of Putin's oldest confidants from St. Petersburg, Sergei Chemezov, floating that possibility. We had the former presidential chief of staff, who is now the Speaker of the Duma, Vyacheslav Volodin, openly discussing this option. And then, of course, more recently, we had Vladislav Surkov discussing the possibility, one of many in the Constitution, but also the fact that Putin could, in fact, stay well beyond the end of his second six-year term in 2024. So, you know, clearly there's, you know, there have been these little trial balloons and signals and smoke signals that have been going up until now. So now, as you point out, the question is whether he didn't actually commit to staying on after 2024. Right. He just said it was he signaled approval for the idea, and he said he might do it. So I think that kind of the way I see it, that bolsters my theory that there's some improvisation going on here. He may do it. He may not do it, but in the meantime, it also keeps people guessing, which is another aspect of, I think, of Kremlin politics that longtime observers have pointed out, that strategic ambiguity works to the benefit of Kremlin personnel and human resources management. When Putin sort of signals that he wants a new prime minister, well, he says, well, it could be this guy or it could be that guy. And we saw this in 2007 and 8 before for Putin in his second four-year term, and there was a discussion about whether Dmitry Medvedev or Sergei Ivanov would be the successor, Putin's successor. Ultimately, it was Medvedev, and you know the rest is history. Right. So strategic ambiguity works well for making these personnel decisions. It keeps certainly people on the outside guessing about what he's going to do, and I think it also keeps people on the inside wondering what exactly he's going to do. So I think whereas a lot of observers, particularly in the press, jumped on Putin's announcement about resetting the constitutional clock or supporting resetting the clock as a sign that he will run again, I think I agree with you that I think we should wait and see whether he actually follows through with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree with you also that, you know, I think a lot of the, you know, a lot of the people in the Duma were kept in the dark, and whether Putin knew or not or decided or not, you know, when to actually go with this amendment that would allow him to run again. You know, I think the number of people who knew about it was very small until the last minute. And as you say, I mean, I also agree, certainly, it does not mean he necessarily will run again. But I would say that I think the option of doing so, it might sort of lead to him actually doing so, just sort of, you know, he can't resist it, or it just seems like it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I agree. Yeah. Definitely. He's setting himself up with options. You know, when he made the decision, a little bit unclear. One thing that, you know, some sources close to the Kremlin and analysts with Kremlin ties have suggested is that part of the decision, or a big factor in his decision, was external factors. That those might have led to or strongly contributed to the decision to enable him to run again. I'm talking about oil prices, the coronavirus, and a few other things. You know, Putin likes to say that the situation in the world is getting less stable. You know, he's been saying that for many years, though. I really, to me, I kind of think this is Kremlin spin, the idea that, well, he was weighing it, and then all of a sudden the coronavirus came along and oil prices, and he decided, well, I better, you know, things are looking pretty unstable. I better create this option for myself. So in my guess is that he was at least seriously considering it and probably planning to give himself this option longer, you know, fairly long ago. In any case, as I mentioned, the nationwide vote on these constitutional changes is set for April 22nd. Now, the Kremlin certainly gets its way in most votes, particularly on a nationwide scale. But I would think that Putin is concerned about the potential effects of the COVID-19 pandemic on these plans. You know, will people be able to get out to vote? Is it safe? Does it make sense to have people going to polling places? So I would think that he's concerned about that. Of course, there are more vital concerns. The Russian government seemed to respond, I would say, more slowly than some, certainly from the viewpoint here in Central Europe. I think the Russian government seemed to respond more slowly than some other countries to the situation with the coronavirus. But now measures are being announced pretty quickly. There are travel restrictions, partial border closures. And just now, this morning, Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin announced I think, $4 billion fund and other economic measures meant to help offset the impact of both the coronavirus and the low oil prices. Mike, would you say that COVID-19 creates challenges for Russia and for the Kremlin that are different from those faced by other countries, or is everyone pretty much in the same boat?
I think it does, to your point about the April 22nd tentative date for voting on these constitutional changes, because these constitutional changes, including the possibility of Putin staying on beyond 2024, they're not only substantive, they're huge. I mean, this is, you know, in many ways, these are sort of existential questions as far as Putinism is concerned. So, there's a lot more writing on the symbolism and substance of the April 22nd vote than perhaps, in other electoral decisions that are underway in other places. Yeah. So, the Kremlin is already concerned about the perception that this whole thing is kind of a facade and a spectacle stage managed by the Kremlin to produce a preordained result, that is Putin staying in power. So, right. The Russians who choose not to vote, for example, if voter turnout is low on April 22nd, then, as with previous presidential votes, that, calls into question the legitimacy of the vote.
Right.
So the Kremlin and the Russian government will do all that it can to build interest and enthusiasm for coming out. But again, they had their work cut out for them even before the coronavirus scare really set in, because people were particularly among Russia's liberal classes were saying, this is all just a joke and a mockery of democracy. So why bother participating? Now, if people aren't are self-quarantining or are staying behind closed doors or just not wanting to participate in a vote, that threatens to suppress voter turnout, and that then causes all sorts of problems for how the vote will be seen or received. So, to your other question about how coronavirus has been handled so far in Russia, if you recall, early on, Russia took some fairly major moves to close down its long, very long border with China.
True, yes.
They restricted not only human traffic across the borders, but they also have restricted cargo. And that was several weeks ago, before coronavirus really kind of sort of spun into, really started hitting hard in other European places.
Yeah, good point.
As of today, we know that there are 63 reported coronavirus infections. That's according to Russian health officials, and the bulk of those are in Moscow. There's increasingly serious skepticism about those numbers and about whether Russian health officials are trying to suppress the numbers, either to prevent public panic or to gather time in order to muster resources to fight this effort. It's unclear how robust the Russian healthcare system is capable to deal with a mass pandemic of this sort. The Russian healthcare system is already kind of creaky in some aspects. you know, we'll have to see what happens in the coming days. But certainly they are taking, it seems like they're taking it seriously at the highest level. And Putin has just appointed the Moscow mayor, Sergei Sobyanin, to be the head of the coronavirus task force in the state council, this advisory council body that was 2 decades ago. So we'll have to see.
Absolutely. Just on the point, those are good points, but about China and the and kind of the stepped up measures. I would say on the nationwide vote on the constitutional changes, you spoke along these lines, but I think, you know, there must be some concern that the optics, as they say, you know, is not great. If you're, you know, are you the speed with which this has been pushed through the Duma and everything, you know, has suggested that the Kremlin and Putin really wants it, you know, and I guess the question for some might be, you know, does it want it so badly that it's, you know, going to jeopardize people's, you know, health by having them come to vote? So I wouldn't rule out a change in the date of the vote. You know, I assume that they would take stock even closer, but, you know, things are unclear in all countries. So I wouldn't rule out an earlier or probably more likely a later date, but just to make it sort of not seem like the government is pushing this through regardless of health concerns. The other thing I'd say is that one thing that I think, I mean, in a way is good for the Kremlin is that the coronavirus has made it easier to restrict street protests, street demonstrations, gatherings. Obviously, all countries are restricting these now, and so this gives a pretext, for the Kremlin to restrict gatherings at this time when, you know, some people certainly would be protesting and would want to protest in large numbers against these constitutional changes. So, you know, that's one way that I think the challenge or the is different for Russia.
And to your point about whether Russia would, you know, jeopardize the health of its citizens in order to make sure that the turnout on April 22nd was robust is it's not a wholly cynical question. there's a parallel situation in Iran with the legislative elections that were held last month there. The coronavirus had already set in Iran at the time, although it wasn't widely known.
Right.
And there's some analysis that's come out in the week since from close Iranian watchers saying that, you know, the Iranian authorities knew that the coronavirus was spreading and was worse than they had let on, but they did not want to panic the electorate and then wholly suppress the turnout in the election. So, you know, I think the coronavirus is obviously still, you know, escalating in Russia and elsewhere, and there's still 5 weeks before the April 22nd referendum. So, you know, it's hard to predict exactly how the Kremlin will handle this, but it's a difficult situation for Kremlin planners looking to make sure that the vote is seen as legitimate and substantive.
Yes, absolutely, and I guess we'll see later, you know, whether this affects the U.S. election. Okay, well, yeah. All right, let's wrap it up for today. Mike, thanks very much for joining me. Some excellent observations.
You bet, anytime.
All right, thank you. I'll be back next Monday. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events and what they might mean going forward. Thanks for listening and stay safe.